Coming up on Tech News Today, Intel earnings mean cheaper Windows tablets. Can Google Play catch iOS App Store? And Marissa Meyer's next sprint step to Yahoo success. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, April 17th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT4. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show we put the most important stories in the tech world in context for you, starting with the top 10 of the day in the news feeds. Microsoft reached a patent licensing agreement with Hon Hai, the parent company of Foxconn, makers of most of the tech you carry around in your pocket. The agreement projects Foxconn, or protects rather, Foxconn from being sued over devices it makes that run Android or Chrome OS. Microsoft says it now has agreements with manufacturers of half the world's Android devices. Google continues to insist the devices do not violate Microsoft's patents.
Intel announced its fiscal Q1 earnings yesterday and met expectations on revenue with $12.6 billion for the quarter, but missed earnings per share at 40 cents due to a declining PC market, according to Bloomberg's analyst consensus. According to research firm IDC, Windows 8 is much to blame for this decline. Sales were down 13.9% for PCs. That's not including tablets or hybrids. Intel's PC group revenue alone totaled $8 billion, which is down almost 6% year over year, although Intel did say in a statement that a decline in overall revenue was what it expected after a holiday season.
I've been gone for a couple of days, so let's get back to some serious tech business. Pornography. The Chinese National Office Against Pornographic and Illegal Publications has told Apple and 197 other websites to remove content it deemed obscene. Apple will have to remove content that is accessible from its App Store, but there aren't any details as to what material was classified as obscene.
Maybe they meant obscenely priced. The tech sector may finally get one thing at once from the U.S. government, more H-1B visas. A bipartisan group of senators released highlights of a proposed immigration bill backed by President Barack Obama that seeks to reform the immigration system and nearly doubles the quota for H-1B visas for skilled workers.
The American Civil Liberties Union has filed a request for investigation and complaint for injunctive relief against AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, and T-Mobile. Why? Because the majority of phones that the carriers sell run Google's Android OS, but rarely receive software updates, a practice that the ACLU says violates provisions of the FTC Act, barring deceptive and unfair business practices, since the carriers aren't disclosing that not providing updates in a timely manner might put a customer at risk of a hacking attack. The filing asks that customers be allowed to terminate contracts that cover a phone that's no longer eligible to receive updates.
The revived version of the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Privacy Act, CISPA, is now facing a veto threat from the White House. In a statement, the Obama administration said it wants additional improvements, and if the bill as currently crafted were presented to the president, his senior advisors would recommend that he veto the bill. The statement also voices a number of concerns, including companies that are offered a broad scope of liability limitations, and that citizens should have a right to know that corporations will be held accountable for failing to safeguard personal information adequately.
The Amazon Android App Store is coming to your country, probably. Developers can now submit apps for sale in 200 additional countries, including South Africa, Brazil, and India. It's quite a jump from the current 7 nations where the App Store exists. Amazon App Store is central to the Kindle Fire and downloadable as an alternative App Store on most Android devices.
Speaking of app stores, United States Google Play Store users say hello to Sherpa, a voice digital assistant that launched a Spanish language Android app in October and is a top app in Google Play market in Spain and Latin America. Sherpa now understands English. That's why it's come to the U.S. Currently uses Google's speech API to translate commands into a kind of meta language, parsing meaning and intent from the resulting string of concepts. Sherpa also has a PayPal deal, is using Twitter's API, and pulls info from LinkedIn profiles and Wikipedia entries.
The first product of the Nokia Exodus will finally see the light of day in May when Nokia left the Mego OS alliance. Many Nokians left the company to go create Mego phones. Yola, J-O-L-L-A, makers of the Sailfish UI for Mego, announced it will show off its first handset next month and kick off a pre-sales campaign, sort of a pseudo crowdfunding thing, for folks who wish to register to buy the phone. Sales of the phone are still expected in the second half of 2013, according to TechCrunch.
Yahoo's released its latest financial information. Let's check the scoreboard. $1.14 billion in revenue, beating the $1.1 billion expected by analysts. Profits were over $390 million. Last year at the same time, profits were only $286 million. On the downside, display revenue and search revenue were down compared to last year. BGC Partners analyst Colin Gillis said display was a relative disaster. Yahoo's stock price took a hit after reporting its financial data.
Always sell on the news, though, so it's so hard to tell. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. Do you want the new Samsung Galaxy S4? I know some of you do. Or maybe some of you are like, no, I don't want that. I still want an iPhone 5, but I don't have any cash for it. Or I want an HTC One. That's coming out. I want to get some cash. Before you upgrade, make sure you sell your used iPhone or other gadget to Gazelle for cash. Find out how much you can get at gazelle.com. They make it easy. That's why I love Gazelle. You go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. I've done this many times. Find your item. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. Then get a risk-free offer for your gadgets. Gazelle locks in the quote for 30 days. Lock it for 30 days. And then you'll get paid fast by check or PayPal or an extra 5% with an Amazon gift card once they get your device. So go to gazelle.com. Right now, get an offer for your Samsung, your iPhone, your HTC, your BlackBerry smartphone, your iPad, other Apple products. Do it today, though, because gadgets may lose value every day that you wait. And it's risk-free to lock in that quote right now, give you a month, 30 days, to figure out what you're going to do with your new phone, how to get that new phone, move your data over, all that good stuff. And then you send it off and get paid fast with cash. What's your iPhone, Samsung, and other Android smartphone worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com and find out. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com. And we thank them for their continuing support of Tech News Today. They've been great. So go check them out. Give them a shot. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, very happy to have Marshall Kirkpatrick, CEO and co-founder of Little Bird, on the show. Welcome to the show, Marshall. Good to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're going to start off talking about some Windows 8 touch devices in relation to that Intel earnings news we had in the news fuse.
Right. Intel CEO Paul Otellini was talking during that earnings call, and he said that when its Bay Trail chip hits, you'll see prices for touch-enabled ultra-thin notebooks as low as $200. Bay Trail is a redesign of the Atom architecture. It's supposed to be the most powerful Atom out there. And Haswell-based ultrabooks should hit as low as $500 when they come out. Marshall, what do you think about pricing Windows devices at $200? Would that revitalize the PC business? Because the PC industry is struggling.
It really is. Well, I think it might change the market share story, and it might put these devices in a lot more people's hands. But the purpose of business and capitalism is not to increase market share. It's to increase revenue and profits. So I'm not sure if selling a whole bunch of bargain basement priced Windows devices is going to make a real big difference, you know, to the bottom line. We all know that the big problem with the PC market is Apple's incredible dominance. That's the problem for everyone else in the market. There was some numbers floating around yesterday that said that Apple's profit from just the Mac is larger than the rest of the entire PC industry's profits combined, despite being far in the back of the pack in terms of market share for PCs. So I'm not sure if that's going to change the equation. We'll have to see what the user experience is like, but it doesn't necessarily sound like the strongest strategy for the business side of things.
Tom, if these companies keep cutting their prices to something like $200, you're talking about basically a phone price or a tablet price. Will people want to go with a full-fledged Windows 8 PC running on Intel, which means it runs full desktop apps? Do you think people would be more likely to get a PC over a phone?
Well, and here's the thing. I don't know if this is true, but what Paul Otellini seems to be implying is when the Bay Trail chips hit, the prices will go down because it will cost less to make them. In that case, what Marshall's pointing out could still be achieved. They might be able to at least maintain revenue. And then if you can compete on price when you can't compete, say, on interface, more people may be willing to take a flyer on you. But it definitely indicates a margin of desperation when they're touting and when Intel, a parts maker, mind you, is touting the price of the devices as the big thing that people want to pay attention to. I do think that you have a better chance with lower prices to get people in the ground floor. But you want to keep them if you want to spread that. And if you really want to take market share, it has to be a good experience. And that's the part that's still up for debate. Some people say it's a fine experience. Other people say it's the worst ever. The reality is somewhere in between.
Sarah, we're in this world of like a good enough PC. People have two devices, a tablet, phone, whatever, and a laptop. Do you think that by cutting a price to low as $200, that's going to gain market share? Because Chromebooks are out there. They're like $250. But there was this this new data from NetApplications showing it's got 0.023% of worldwide browsing. I don't know if $200 seems like it'll be enough.
Well, you know, in the case of the Chromebook, I mean, I think that people always point to the Chromebook as, well, it's limited. So there are certain people who wouldn't want to do anything more than what a Chromebook will allow. But as far as, you know, these ultra-thin notebooks being priced really low, I mean, I would say that, you know, in the early days of Android, that was one of the selling points, was that it was an operating system that provided something that was an experience much like, you know, iOS, which was on top at the time, but you could get devices that were cheaper and that was attractive to people. And the experience, you know, it needed a little bit of ramping up and it needed a little bit of finessing, but the experience was strong enough so that now it's a very, very dominant mobile OS. So I kind of see the price drop as, yeah, it is a desperation move, but it has worked before. So it's not necessarily the wrong choice. It's kind of the only choice.
Marshall, do you think a price drop is going to make people accept Windows 8 more? The thing is, that start screen has been disorienting for a lot of people. Rumors of Microsoft changing things for 8.1 with Windows Blue. If it's only $200, do you think people are more likely to go, you know what, new UI, I don't care, it's $200.
I don't know. I mean, the iPad is magical. And these devices, when they're done really well, they're magic. And people say that if you're competing on price, it's because you're not offering or articulating the value that as best you could. And so I think that there's just not enough magic or value there, perhaps. And it's a shame to see tablets compete on price when there's so much potential for users.
And when I see this price dropping, I'm thinking that Windows RT is like going to be super dead. If these devices are $200 and they run the full version of Windows 8 and they handle all the old desktop applications and all of the regular applications that Microsoft's pushing, and these devices are so low cost, it seems like it doesn't make any sense that you would ever get a Windows RT device, because what's the point of that? It's supposed to be a price savings. But if Intel has their power behind this and they have some battery life to it, I think in the long term, we're looking at $99 PCs. We're going to have pretty much disposable PCs. I'm kind of excited to see prices dropping at that point. But now, it's just there's so much competition for your time, be it consoles or your tablet, your phone. $200 PC, it just seems like it's another device you keep around your house.
Although one way you can make money off these things is the loss leader method and get people to buy the apps. That's kind of the battle that Google Play is in. And they're in the battle with the Apple App Store, which, as Marshall pointed out, Apple makes their money off the hardware. That's the conventional wisdom there. Sarah, what's going on in that battle?
Well, you know, it's the Apple's App Store has always been touted as, well, that's where if you're a developer, you're going to make all the money. That's a trend that's been constant for a while. However, Android is catching up. An App Annie Index report shows Q4 of 2012, Apple's App Store was bringing in about four times the sales of Google Play. It is now down to 2.6 times the sales of Google Play just in the first quarter of this year, in 2013. Google Play has reached close to about 90% of the App Store's downloads. Although the iOS still leads in revenue, the two are, you know, they're getting closer and closer together, which is kind of interesting. You can see for our video viewers, as far as revenue goes, Android's still got a ways to go, but that gap is definitely closing. Also, some interesting statistics about what is the biggest revenue driver. Games, for sure, are the biggest, especially in the largest markets like U.S., China, Russia, Japan, South Korea. On iOS, photo and video apps have climbed to the number third spot. Education in number four. Not too surprising for iOS because education is big there. In the Google Play Store, social as a category is now in the top five of all apps downloaded. And the top five Google Play countries by download are the U.S., South Korea, India, Russia, and Japan. You've got some overlap with iOS, too. U.S., China, U.K., Japan, and France. What I think is almost the most interesting part of all of this is Andy Rubin spoke at in Tokyo at the Japan New Economy Summit and said that originally project, the Android project, they thought it was pretty ambitious, and they were going for about 9% of the smartphone market share in North America and Europe by 2010. You remember that Google purchased Android back in 2005. So they thought in 2010, if we've got 9% of the smartphone market share, you know, in these huge markets, we're going to be doing quite well. Obviously, Android grew quite a bit faster than that. But also, that originally Android was supposed to be a camera OS. We've talked about Android showing up in smart cameras, but that was the original point of Android. They were supposed to be smart. They would either connect wirelessly or you know, via wire to a PC. Then there'd be some sort of Android data center so you could store your photos in the cloud. And then they thought, well, you know, maybe cameras aren't really the biggest market. And once Google purchased Android, it got spun out into a mobile OS that was about a lot more than photos. Marshall, does that surprise you that Android changed so much from what their original goals were?
It doesn't. That's the great thing about Android is its flexibility. And hopefully we'll see all kinds of new things be done with that flexibility in the future. So far, it feels like it's been a little disappointing. If you look at those numbers that you showed on the screen about the number of downloads versus revenue, the story is pretty clear. It seems to me that the apps being downloaded on Google Play are lower price, probably lower quality apps than what people are buying on iOS. I know I paid $10 for an iPad app last week, Panic's new dashboard, and I'm
frozen.
Possibly render speechless because it basically copies the entire Android widget experience. If you look at the Panic dashboard there. I was looking at those numbers too, but I think Google's been doing a really good job taking that Play Store and dropping out a bunch of really lousy apps. They've been cleaning it up. And I'm just kind of curious when this is going to make a shift. When are developers going to go Android first and Android only at some point? Because iOS was getting a lot of the developers because they were getting paid.
I think it's going to be a ways before necessarily it's the no-brainer decision that, oh, Android needs to come before. If that even happens at all, it's just kind of obvious that Android is kind of coexisting with iOS as the two main platforms to develop with. So I think what comes first is hopefully simultaneous development of some sort, if resources allow for that. But I mean, kind of getting back to what Marshall was saying about the quality of apps, I think that's changed a lot. I think that's commonly been the conception around Android apps and why they don't sell so well. And it's certainly bared to be true the last couple of years, but you've seen a very big shift in the last year, especially particularly since Google has kind of reformatted and presented guidelines that developers can follow to make their apps better. And I think that's part of what you're seeing here. People are willing to pay for better designed quality apps. And we have those now in greater numbers, maybe not as much in comparison to the offerings on iOS, but they're certainly getting better, and they will continue to get better.
Well, and the demographics make a difference too. Mm-hmm. You have a broader audience in most measurements in it with Android as well, and that's good. That's going to affect the spending patterns for sure. Is Marshall unfrozen?
Let's see here. I just got Marshall back. Okay, we got you back.
We're gonna move on into the Yahoo earnings. We heard those in the news. Fuse, $1.14 billion revenue, earnings per share of 35 cents, beat analyst expectations. Although the display revenue is a big concern, Marissa Meyer in the earnings call said that they're getting the company growing at a rate we would like to, but it will take several years. So she's saying, don't worry about those numbers yet. We've got a long range plan that involves a bunch of sprints. The first sprint was reinvigorating the company culture. Employee satisfaction and retention. She says that companies with the best talent win, and it's clear we are back in the game. They've tripled the number of resumes they get. Attrition rate has halved. And 14% of their new hires in the last quarter were what they call boomerangs. That's people who used to work at Yahoo and have now come back because they're like, hey, you know what? Yahoo's not so bad anymore. I want to come back and be a part of that. The next sprint, according to Marissa Meyer, is building beautiful products. They say Yahoo will have more frequent, smaller product changes across the portfolio and really take user desires into account. Make this a modern website. Meyer took over as president and CEO of Yahoo not a year ago, July 16th, 2012. But a lot of people are still beating her up. Like, you still have to pay attention to the numbers, Marissa. Marshall, what do you think of this plan of attack saying, we'll get to the numbers in a few years, but we have to take this one step at a time?
Well, I'm cheering for Marissa for sure, and cheering for Yahoo to get back to the days when it was doing incredible things and supporting an awesome developer culture. So I'm excited to hear that building beautiful products is the next stage in that. But, you know, I guess let us know when world-class leading engineers start leaving Facebook and Twitter to go join Yahoo. Maybe they can pull it off. I hope so.
Yeah, she is definitely saying we've got the talent thing done, but you don't hear stories like that, do you?
Nope.
Sarah, what do you think? Oh, go ahead, Marshall.
No, I was just going to say, there's a circle of top companies like that in the Valley that make headlines, scoring big coups with great hires, and it's quite a drama. But you don't hear that so often. About Yahoo, but maybe they're filling out the ranks with really solid, great folks that just don't capture headlines when they move jobs. Who knows?
And some aqua hires. They've acquired some companies, got some engineers that way. Sarah, what do you think of Marissa's cautionary saying, look, we're taking this one step at a time. We have to build from the ground up. We can't just go right after the earnings.
Well, I think, it would be easy to say, well, how convenient for her because she wants a little bit more time to turn around this company. And earnings reports are earnings reports. But she has a point. She absolutely has a point. Yahoo is a mess. It was a huge company. You got all these people who, aren't even showing up at the office and these departments that aren't working efficiently. And Yahoo doesn't have products that people respect anymore. So it's like, okay, let's get the mass exodus under control. Let's make sure that great people who used to work here want to come back. Let's create a company culture that makes people happy, because you can't build anything when you've got, this company sort of imploding on itself, right? And that's true. It's not going to be it's not going to happen within a couple of quarters. This is, this is less than a year ago where she started to turn around things. And I agree that it's like, well, what are some of these great significant hires? We can't really think of any rock stars who want to join Yahoo yet. But again, this was a company that was in such deep doo-doo that it's a bit of a long-term process.
When we look at this, one of the things that she says she's doing next is the beautiful products. And that's one thing a lot of people have been waiting for is I don't see a big change at anything on Yahoo. Now she implies you're going to start seeing things. You're going to see more frequent updates. What do you think we need to see?
I think we need to see an eventual overhaul of all the Yahoo properties tied together, because we have Flickr and we have all these other companies that Yahoo owns that people don't even realize are all part of the same Yahoo universe. Google's done a really good job of tying all that stuff together. I think one of the bigger reasons why we haven't seen huge shifts is that Marissa Meyer does not want to alienate any of the people who are currently using Yahoo. So we've had some cleaning up of the home pages. We've had some revitalizations of certain products. And that seems to be a smart, steady approach so that when they do these redesigns in the long term, like Yahoo Mail changed a little bit, when they do these redesigns, people aren't screaming and complaining and curious and wondering what's going on and abandoning ship. So I think we're going to see these product, we're going to see small changes, these small iterations, just so they don't alienate its current user base.
Taking it slow. Could be smart. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Shutterstock.com. If you're looking for stock photos, you got to check out Shutterstock.com. You'll find the perfect image or video for your next creative project, whether it's for your website or a pamphlet or publication, an advertisement. Maybe you're doing a video. You can choose from over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. And the thing that I like, the thing that I go to Shutterstock for, is they curate this. They've got professional photographers and artists. They review each image individually for content and quality before adding it to its library. And Shutterstock adds 10,000 images every day. So every time you visit, you're going to see something new. Plus, the flexible pricing. For that quality, you can choose individual image packs or a monthly subscription for the best deal. You can download 25 images a day with a standard subscription, and you can download any image in any size, and you pay only one price. Shutterstock gives you the images you need to bring your creative projects to the next level. And you can view them on the web, as you might know. There's also a spectrum tool that allows you to search by color spectrum. They have a great search engine there. And shareable light boxes. You can save images to a light box gallery, access them anytime, share them with other team members. Those team members could even be using an iPad app. Shutterstock has an award-winning iPad app. The offering's global. They have offices all over the world. Germany, China, Italy, Brazil, Belgium. A truly global marketplace with multilingual customer service. I'm always looking for good stock images for my blogs, and Shutterstock has been providing great ones. I use it on It's a Thing to find a shrub. That's a kind of a drink, kind of a cocktail. You can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. No credit card needed. Just start an account. Begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be. Save those assets. Find your new light box. And once you decide to purchase something, remember this offer code, TNT4, and new accounts will receive 30% off any package. It's 30%. Shutterstock.com, 30% off new accounts. Use offer code TNT4. We want to thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today. All right, speaking of hiring people away from Facebook, Facebook just stole an executive from Apple.
Well, I don't know if you'd say stole, because Apple didn't want him. Bloomberg reports that Richard Williamson, the manager who had led Apple's mapping efforts, which some of you might shudder at, has joined Facebook's mobile software group. This is according to people who are knowledgeable of the hire. Now, Williamson was hired by Steve Jobs back in the day. He was tasked to work on iOS software, but was let go back in November after the big Apple Maps backlash. He was let go. So the thing about that is, what does Facebook want to do with Richard Williamson? But he's clearly not the only sort of high profile management person who's been hired from Apple to go over to Facebook. You've got a couple iPhone managers who helped develop the touch interface for the iPhone. You've got a couple software engineers who joined when Facebook acquired Pushpop Press, former Apple engineers, software engineers. Facebook also hired kind of famous designer Lauren Brichter, who created not only Tweety, but the game Letterpress, which as many people, anybody who plays it says, oh, it's designed really nicely. He also worked at Apple back in the day. But I wonder, going back to Williamson, Marshall, is this Facebook knowing what to do with somebody who's very capable with software and maps more than Apple? What is Facebook thinking?
Oh, I think that they're they're probably thinking, here's an incredibly capable, skilled, high-level tech executive that that we'd like to bring over and make a part of the team, where they're doing really innovative stuff over there at Facebook. It's got to be a really fun place to work. If you saw the video about the chat heads experiment that some engineers at Facebook did recently with rewriting real basic Android code to put this beautiful chat experience on top of every other application on your Android phone. I mean, those are the sorts of things where, you know, Googlers might have 20% projects, but there's a whole lot of excitement and experimentation going on at Facebook. And, you know, bringing somebody over that was real high level at Apple to participate in that sounds really smart.
Tom, what do you think? Did Williamson have to go just because Maps was seen as such a failure, at least out of the gate, that it was almost make an example of somebody who had been with the company for a while but had failed somehow?
You know, that's a popular theory, and there may be something to that. I don't know. There are all kinds of reasons why this might happen, and maybe it's just a change in strategy. It may not be a backlash. It may be that we've decided that this isn't working. It's not your fault, Williamson, but bye. And Facebook says, great, we'll snap that person up. That's a talented person. Maybe Facebook thinks Apple's making a mistake. It's always hard to tell, but we will see. A little bit of evidence about that theory as we see what Williamson ends up doing at Facebook. If they come out with, I don't expect him to come out with a Maps competitor, but something with Facebook Places that improves the experience and is innovative, I would look for that to happen in the next year or so.
As we see, you know, there are former Apple employees who now work at Nest Labs, quite a few Apple engineers who now work at Square. You've got Facebook taking a lot of talented folks who used to work at Apple. Does Apple have a retention problem too?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that it did for a while. It seems like the old corporate culture is shifting a bit. Apple was a bit contentious, and there was one guy at the top that wouldn't be very diplomatic when it came to things and brought in a lot of people sort of like him. Scott Forstall apparently was another divisive kind of person. He's also gone from Apple. So they might have retention. They had a retention problem, I think. Now I think the way that the teams have been shifted, the reports that the Apple teams are working together better in a more cohesive manner, I think they're not going to have this problem going forward. When it comes to Richard Williamson joining Facebook, we were talking last week about Foursquare, you know, boosting its partnerships, and I was even saying how when I think about check-ins, I think Foursquare. If Williamson at Facebook can use all of the mapping data that Facebook acquired with Gowalla, if they can make these check-ins and these deals and all these things be more cohesive as well in either Facebook Home or the new versions for iOS, if they can do that, then you start going, okay, wait, Facebook, I'm going to start using this a lot more. And it becomes a much more serious threat to something like Foursquare.
All right, let's move along to something that impacts all of our lives, always has good promises, and usually never delivers: battery tech. This one seems like it might deliver, but we'll see what you guys think. University of Illinois professor William P. King has led a team to make a new lithium-ion micro battery. The research was published in the April 16th edition of the Nature Communications Journal, along with author grad student James Pekel. It's a high energy and high power battery. Now, you may not understand or know about this, but as I understand it, high energy refers to releasing a charge fast. The ability to say, like, let's give a boost to something. You need that sort of thing a lot of times, and you use supercapacitors for it. This is a lithium-ion battery that can do it, but it can also store a lot. And usually, you have to give up one for the other. If you want high-release charge, you have to give up storage. Or if you want a lot of storage, then power is not going to release as fast. This one does both. For instance, you could supposedly jumpstart a car with this battery. That's that high-energy release. And then go charge a cell phone, which is just storing a lot of energy and transferring it. It recharges 1,000 times faster than competing technologies. So you could recharge a cell phone in 1 second. The footprint is a few millimeters, so it's going to be much smaller. You can have credit card size phones. Estimated to make devices 30 times smaller and be able to broadcast a radio signal, like a cell signal, 30 times farther. It works. The next step is integrating it with other electronic components. That's key to making it work. And low-cost manufacturing. That's always with new technologies, how to make it scale so you can have industrial production. Marshall, Have you looked much at this battery tech? What wager would you put on the idea of us getting this anytime soon?
Well, I haven't looked closely at this tech, so I don't know, but I sure know that there's a lot of people waiting for it, not just for phones to last longer, but people who are building what's called the Internet of Things, the expected 50 billion connected devices around the world, say that a lot of their capabilities are held back by poor battery options. You know, if you've got a sensor in every parking spot to let you know whether there's a car parked there or not, or sensors around the house watching your elderly parents to see if they've taken their medication or gone outside, those sorts of things people are building now, but batteries, especially if they're broadcasting a cell signal, these devices run out of battery power in days, maybe a month. And I think there's going to be a whole bunch of really awesome new things that can be done with remote sensing technology or sensor technology if we can get batteries like this.
What do you think, Ayaz? Are we gonna get this kind of thing? I mean, and Marshall makes a great point. It's not just for cell phones. We could enable all kinds of small devices in all kinds of situations.
I don't know when we're going to see this. It depends on what kind of companies either invest in this technology, if this is readily accessible by people. When I first heard of something like the Bloom Energy Server, supposed to be these like refrigerator-sized components that can power factories, I thought that sounded crazy, but a bunch of companies bought into it because it actually worked. Getting this to work, especially there's companies like Tesla out there that are probably very curious about something like this. And with all these rumors of smartwatches, all of these wearable display devices, all of these things, I think the industry is ripe with enough interest in something like this that this might get pushed further faster than we're normally used to seeing battery technologies, especially even with something like Intel saying we want Ultrabooks to last all day. There is this increasing demand to be connected all the time, and if we can get these devices to have charges that can last a lot longer, I'm thinking this is going to change a lot of things, and so many companies are interested in that right now.
I can't wait for the time where it turns into not a conversation of, is this an all-day battery life situation? You know, we were talking about Google Glass yesterday. They're saying all-day battery life. Well, what does that mean exactly? Because we all know that all-day battery life isn't always the case if you're using, you know, a device to its fullest potential, right? You know, running a lot of video or that sort of thing. And it turns into something where whole systems can be built around the convenience of recharging when it's, you know, part of your schedule, not a can I get through the day type of a thing. It's like, oh, 3 days a week, here's my sort of schedule, this is how I get things done type of a thing, because you got to charge it at some point, but it's not this thing that's going to hinder what you do on a daily basis.
And think of design too. I mean, that's the other consideration here. If your iPad or other tablet doesn't have to be mostly battery, gives you a lot more flexibility with what you can do with that and how to differentiate that design. Speaking of design and mobile devices, Motorola's got some ideas of how they're going to get back into the mobile device game. What are those, Ayaz?
Yeah, Motorola's design chief, Jim Wicks, was talking to PC Mag, saying a whole lot of things. He's explaining the future products you're going to see from Motorola. He's saying on the software side, Wicks says that Motorola is going to embrace Android and will be the unadulterated version of Android. He says Motorola phones will be as bloatware-free as possible. On the hardware, they're not doing a Samsung approach. What they want to do is reach a phone size that is just right, and current phones are exceeding that sweet spot. What they're going to be doing with their phones, they're going to be saying that scratch resistance and drop resistance will be key in differentiating their products. And something crazy that they're stealing from Samsung, one brand across all carriers. That's what they're trying to get going with their Motorola phones. And he's saying that Wicks is saying that various Google business units are turning to Motorola for advice on things Motorola has expertise in and vice versa. And we're going to see the first Google-influenced Motorola phones in the second half of this year. Marshall, does this strategy sound like something that can make Motorola a powerhouse in the smartphone world again?
I don't know. I love my phone. It's a magical little portal to all the world's knowledge on demand. And if your value proposition is that you can sell me a new one that I can drop and that isn't going to scratch, that's kind of a shoulder shrug for me.
Jason, you were talking about this on All by Android yesterday. What do you think of the idea of Motorola just saying, look, we're going to have the plain vanilla Android as much as we can do that, and will that make it stand out? It's because everyone else has a skin.
Well, I think the challenge, for the thing that I don't understand is what ends up happening with the Nexus program necessarily, because we've kind of gotten used to hearing that about Nexus. But I think it's a great starting point for Motorola to say, you know what? The overlays that we're doing, never really, hugely popular. Let's stick to the strengths of Android. If it's within the Google, you know, kind of grasp of Google and the design insight that Google can bring to it, it only makes sense to make it a stock experience. Does it differentiate it from the other devices? That really depends. And, you know, the Android kind of landscape right now is so full of devices that it's really hard to differentiate yourself. But he says a lot of really good things. And he says a lot of things that I think, fans of Android have kind of been hoping to hear would come out of this kind of merging of Motorola within Google. The fact that they're keeping it vanilla, the fact that they're going to unify the brand across multiple carriers and not, you know, in the past they've kind of focused a lot on Verizon, hopefully kind of at least here in the States, opening that up and just saying we've got a unified product to roll across all carriers certainly couldn't hurt.
This is a delicate line for Google to walk. Yeah. If they're saying Google is influencing Motorola, I think the reason that most partners haven't objected is because there's been a nice big firewall between those two. So I'm curious how that influence manifests in a way that doesn't anger their other partners. And it sounds like what Motorola is trying to do is mimic not just Samsung, but Apple. To say we're going to have one phone with a stock experience that's unified across carriers, it's really hard to do that unless you control the interface. And the only way Motorola could control the interface is to work with its owner, Google. Mm-hmm. And so, again, you go back into walking that delicate line.
Sarah, what do you make of this? Does it seem like Motorola is talking a little bit too much? They're saying all the cool phones are coming out in the second half of the year. So what does that do for this half of the year?
Well, not much. That's for sure. I also think, and somebody pointed out in the chat room as well, that it's very hard to say that, you know, if you're just talking about hardware, that a phone size has, we've cracked it. We've got the one that's just right, because it simply depends on who you are and what you're looking for and what's comfortable and how big you want your screen. And that's been the beauty of Android for a while, right? You could say, oh, sure, well, the iPhone is just the one and that's what you get. And that works really well for Apple. But the Apple culture is nothing like the Motorola / Google culture. And for Motorola to sort of reinvent itself as a, here are these beautiful, wonderful flagship phones and they're scratch resistant and they're just perfect and you're going to be excited about them, that is a stretch. And it's not impossible, but it's a real stretch. And they're going to have to change the way that people perceive Motorola quite a bit in a short amount of time.
I wonder if Google's going to do anything to shift that Nexus program a little bit. There's always been this discussion since Facebook Home came out, why not have a much more Google-centric phone? The fact that stock Android is stock Android doesn't necessarily stick you in the Google universe. It just goes, here's Android, this is what it's supposed to be like. Mm-hmm. I wonder if Google would go, you know what, we can tweak this a little bit and say, all the stuff's baked in, it's right here, and that'll make it more Googlier.
Let's maybe fire up the randomized. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. Maybe they should hire some of the Facebook people that are rewriting Android code and changing the Android experience so much to come over in house to Google.
You're really for raiding between these big companies, aren't you?
It's exciting. Yeah, it's fun to watch.
It's true. It's not. It's not. That's not false. All right, let's fire up the randomizer. And we see $15,000 come out or something like that. A North Carolina woman walked into Save Point Video Games in Charlotte, North Carolina, carrying a copy of Stadium Events, a family fitness game from Bandai, which supposedly had been destroyed after it had been limited release in the northern part of the United States in 1987. Nintendo bought the North American rights to it, and so the Bandai versions were supposed to have been eliminated. But not only did one make it out, but one made it out in really good condition. And the Save Point Video Games, couldn't even afford to buy it. The woman's like, yeah, I'm expecting like $7,000 to $15,000. And they're like, yeah, that's probably about right for what you got there. And we don't have that kind of cash. They offered her a consignment deal. And she's like, nah, I'll just go on eBay. So if you're in the market for a rare version of Stadium Events, you might want to troll eBay for this.
Poor Goodwill.
Or just hang out at Goodwill's more often.
Right. How much did she pay for it at Goodwill? Like $7.99.
$8. Yeah.
That means Goodwill missed out on a huge profit, potentially. I mean, a big, you know, we'll save the world with Goodwill, but they just sold something for $8. It's too bad they're going to miss out on the $15,000.
I'm not sure Goodwill could get $15,000 for it. I guess they could put it up on eBay.
We need an antiques roadshow for games or just old weird tech.
I think you're right.
Okay.
I think that. Yeah,
that's
if
fun,
that
right?
doesn't already exist.
We've got enough old stuff, right? We could get at least a season.
This is true.
Just behind me, we got enough stuff.
Just sell everything. All right, let's thank our other sponsor for today's show, Ring Central. We talk about it all the time. We do everything in the cloud, and our phone system at the office is no exception. Ring Central allows you to do zero startup costs. You don't have to run a bunch of hardware. It's called PBX hardware. You usually have to run. Now you don't have to do any of that stuff. Zero startup costs, no PBX hardware to install or maintain. RingCentral allows you to easily customize all your call handling. You can get your voicemail sent to your email, get your fax messages on your smartphone. If there's people insistent on sending you fax, you don't have to roll your eyes anymore. You can handle them the way you want to. They're happy. And now they have a new feature, RingCentral Conferencing. Get your own single conference bridge number ready for unlimited conference calls with up to 1,000 participants. So it's probably going to be big enough for your conference call. Lots of features. You can mute participants, get caller count, record conferences, and more. And it's easy to use. It works with your desk phone, but it also works with your iPhone, your Android phone, or that RingCentral soft phone. It's free as part of your monthly service. So check it out. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user. And you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial and they have a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners. It's 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Once again, 800-543-9980. Or you could also go to ringcentral.com and use promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Let's take a gander at the calendar.
Nice. Let's do it. It's a big earnings day tomorrow. We've got IBM, we got Microsoft, Google, Verizon, and Nokia will all announce their earnings reports. And Samsung has confirmed that the Galaxy S4 is coming to all seven U.S. carriers on April 4th, all seven U.S. carriers, but T-Mobile is getting it on April 24th, and then it'll come to Sprint on April 27th as well.
And everybody else is sprinkled in between, I guess.
Right.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a message from the one and only Patrick Beja. He says, hey guys, a quick comment, Google's proposal to the EU and Alan's reaction. He mentioned this was comparable to making Budweiser include a can of Miller Lite in every 24-pack and went on to say it wouldn't help. I agree with the comparison, but not with the quick dismissal. If you get a sample of a competitor's product, you might like it and switch. The challenge then falls on said competitor, who needs to create a compelling product or a delicious beverage to win customers over, which does seem fair. Not only do I believe it would help in a monopolistic situation, but I also think it wouldn't be fair to ask much more. Would we ask of Google to randomly send people to Bing's search results for one in four queries? I don't see many reasonable options beyond the free sample one they're proposing. Interesting point when it comes to including one with the others. It would fall on the competitor, I guess, because I know I've tried out a bunch of competing products and sometimes you just go back to the original one because it was that good.
I still don't think it's fair to make Budweiser include a can of Miller, and I don't know that it's fair for Google to have to point out other competitors when they put one of their own products in search. But I guess because they have such a large percentage that the monopolistic remedy is what makes that argument work out.
Got another email from Marlon, the guy from Trinidad, who says, I can use the Caribbean example to explain what the big deal is with WhatsApp, and it has a bit to do with BlackBerry. A few years ago, BlackBerry made some key deals with phone companies here, offering lower cost BlackBerry devices on pay-as-you-go plans. The phone companies offered BlackBerry Messenger-only services as well. With the influx of Android and iPhones into the market, a lot of people switched, but they still wanted that same BlackBerry Messenger-type service, and WhatsApp was one of the stock apps on BlackBerry phones, so it was first used in conjunction with BBM, and now a lot of people just still use it. WhatsApp's power is that it's cross-platform. It's a lot more user-friendly than BBM and had many of the same features as BBM that people liked already. Also, it's free on Android for the first year and sucked in a lot of people who gladly pay to keep it because it's convenient. As Sarah pointed out on Friday, and I can confirm, young people use chat clients like WhatsApp and BBM on their phones more than Facebook because they can send pictures and group message and send broadcast messages, and it doesn't matter what phone they have, from a cheap Android phone to an iPhone, it just works. Well, wow, now, Facebook Messenger is something that you can use cross-platform as well. GroupMe is another example, but maybe not as many platforms. So that's a good point that Marlon makes.
Yeah, that's a really interesting about the BBM crossover into WhatsApp. I didn't realize that part of that story. Very cool. All right, well, that's it for this show. Marshall Kirkpatrick, a pleasure to have you join us today. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
So tell us, before we go, a little bit about Little Bird and how can we get littlebird.com?
Sure. Well, if you go over to getlittlebird.com, you can get access to it there. What we're doing is building a search engine for people. We'll find you the smartest, most trusted, most influential people in any field online. So if you do research for work, looking to figure out who to engage with, who to learn from, we automate that process, and it's a super powerful research tool and lots of fun to use.
So searching for experts, and then you actually get to ask the experts questions?
We give you tools that make it easier to engage with those people.
Gotcha.
Online.
Very interesting. And if one of those experts is in-house, then will Europe force you to point to three other external experts?
Once we get to that kind of market share, I hope that we may we be so fortunate.
I hope you never have to deal with that, but I hope you get the kind of market share that would make it possible. Getlittlebird.com. Thanks again, Marshall, for joining us. And thank you all for joining us and watching or listening. TechNewsToday.reddit.com is our subreddit where you can suggest stories for us to cover each and every day. Vote them up, vote them down. Based on what other people suggest as well. And you can always find us at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow with Ryan Shrout as our guest from PC Perspective. We'll see you then.